You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Are friends with fantasy benefits. Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I think the Red Sox, no matter what his contract is, they don't play this shit. Like, they don't mess around. Like,
we are friends with fantasy benefits.
Can I just say that my world became a better place today now that I won't have to watch Brett Laurie flail at sliders low and away anymore. My God. I like Laurie, and I'm actually a little bit bummed they cut him because I still feel like he's got...
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
You know, it offers a little hope that there's like some giant, giant season that we can't even imagine in there.
They're like the Patriots. Like, they're going to do whatever they can to compete. Money's not an issue. Like, they'll go trade for someone else.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Welcome to episode 231 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Eli Rosenzweig. Eli, how you doing?
I'm doing good, buddy. What about you?
I'm doing fantastic. Just another beautiful day in California here. How are things in Boston?
Not as cold as it's been, so that's not bad.
That's an improvement. Well, joining us today is a very special guest. It is Peter Kreutzer. Peter, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing good.
Well, welcome.
It's a little colder here in New York than it's been. It actually feels a little like winter today. Nice winter, but update you on that.
Yeah, I'm hoping it warms up by the time we come out to kind of see everybody at Tout Wars in just about a month's time. Are you excited for Tout Wars?
We've got a great lineup and we have a great facility this year. The draft is open to the public. The auctions are open to the public. In a beautiful facility, a beautiful restaurant and bar, which is the home of the Fantasy Sports Network, and they have a studio there. And I think we're going to have a lot of fun. It's going to go. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I know Eli and I are really excited. We're coming out to crash and hopefully help out with some of the festivities. So we are looking forward to meeting you in person, but before we jump into our list of players to finish up our third base preview for the week, Peter, why don't you tell people where you can reach on social media and then give yourself some plugs. Tell people a little bit about yourself and what you do in the industry.
I've been a fantasy baseball writer for 20 plus years. I started out writing for Alex Patton and Peter Golenbach's books, and was one of the original staff at ESPN Sports Zone when it started up. I wrote for many years for Major League Baseball website about I'm playing a character named Roto Man, and people would send me their fantasy questions and I would answer them. I still do a little bit of that at my website, which is blog.askrotoman.com. I show up sometimes on Twitter at Kroyte, Kroyte. And you can almost always find me at patentandco.com, which is a fantastic baseball discussion board focused around player pages, as if it were RotoWire or Baseball Reference. There are stats, but then it's a place where people can put in information about ask questions about players or be opinionated about players and what the prospects are. And we have a lot of fun over there. It's a great, great group of guys talking about baseball every day.
Nice. Well, definitely go check all that stuff out and reach out to Peter on social media, on Twitter for questions and things like that. Let's go ahead and jump right into our third base preview. And one of the top kind of elite guys this year is Nolan Arenado. Where do you kind of see him within the first round of fantasy drafts this year?
Well, he's the top third baseman. I think I have him a tick above Chris Bryant. You could go either way there. The thing about Arenado, he's young. He actually was the best third baseman 2 years ago and improved last year. And I think he walked more. He demonstrated basically that the best can get better. He would be a superstar in any ballpark, but he is really, of course, helped by playing in Coors and has been really consistent, which just tells me for his three major league years, it offers a little hope that there's like some giant season that we can't even imagine in there. And that's a reason to go for him in the top half of the first round.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Arenado for this year?
Yeah, he's fantastic. Like Peter said, he doubled his walk rate last year, which increased his runs from 97 to 116. He even decreased his strikeout rate a little bit. Before he was kind of like elite and average. Now he's kind of an OBP asset as well. So he's got elite power. I mean, he's obviously Coors helps, but he's fantastic. I think he's a top five pick right around that area.
Yeah, I don't think you can really blame anybody for taking him in the top five. Really, I mean, I think there's an argument to be made for him in the top three, though I don't know, with the depth at the position at third base, whether I'd be willing to pull the trigger in the top three on Arenado. 133 RBIs last year. I mean, those are video game type numbers, and he gets to put those kind of numbers up because of the playing in Coors and for the Rockies every year. Only 25 years old, entering his age 26 season, so it isn't inconceivable, like Peter mentioned, that we could see another level and we could see one of those just video game type years from a guy like Arenado. Love him. Love the fact he almost doubled his walk rate last year. So. Great in OBP formats as well.
I think we've got to get rid of that video game number thing for baseball. Have you ever tried to hit in the MLB The Show? It's really hard to score runs, man.
I mean, I'll be honest. I haven't played a video game since my daughter was born about 6.5 years ago.
See, I think it works for basketball. Like, Steph Curry puts up video game numbers because it's easy to score in NBA 2K. But in MLB The Show, it's impossible to score runs.
But what if the game is Asteroids? You run up the score there. It's
yeah, or Pong. I mean, I
well, you guys are I can how old are you people? Pong. Jesus.
I think it's been about 6 or 7 years since I last played a video game, unfortunately. But
too bad Mike Werner and Matt Thompson weren't on this podcast right now, because they pretty much dedicate their lives to that game.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's good to know that they need to do more around this company. Let's move on and talk about another guy, Manny Machado, another elite option kind of in the third base pool, but also in the shortstop pool as well. Peter, what are your thoughts on Machado for this year?
Well, Machado is he's right there too. The interesting thing about third base is how many guys there are in that top group. The thing about Machado that going into last year made him look like he was going to be a number one or number two pick in the future was the stolen bases from 2015. He stole 20 bases. Last year, zero. He was thrown out three times early in the season. He stopped running. He said he wasn't hurt. He could run. He's just as fast as he always was. But he's sitting ahead of Chris Davis and Mark Trumbo, and if he gets thrown out, he costs the team a run much of the time, and he's not going to run. He's got to steal some bases this year, but he's not. That's not an asset, and that drops him down. I think that puts him into the middle of the top round.
I think that is a really fair point, because I mean, I was expecting him to decrease in the stolen base number last year, but I didn't think he would steal no bases. I mean, I don't think anybody predicted that.
It's never happened. Oh. Nobody has ever stolen 20 bases 1 year and stolen none the next year while playing, obviously.
I did not know that, but I do know that the Orioles as a team only stole around, I think, I'm looking it up as I speak. Yes, the team only stole 19 bases, the entire team of the Orioles. and so, like, I would expect him to steal a few bases this year, but I don't think I would be able to pencil him in for more than maybe five at the most, and even that might be pushing it. I think the return of Trumbo, when Trumbo was a free agent and it looked like he might not return to Baltimore, I was thinking, okay, maybe this gives Machado the opportunity to run more. But with Trumbo returning, I think I'm probably not believing that we're ever going to see another 10 or 20 stolen base season from Machado. Or at least I can't bank on that. The power is great. You know, I wish his walk rate didn't decrease last year, because he did walk at almost 10% clip in 2015, and I thought that was nice growth, but it appears that kind of reverted back to previous levels. I still think he is, especially with the shortstop eligibility, I think he's a mid to late first rounder, but there's also other options that are very interesting, and so I understand why a lot of people are passing on him this year. Eli, what are your thoughts on Manny Machado?
I don't pat myself on the back too often on this podcast, but I believe I had this last year during the third base preview that Machado was not going to steal any bases. I don't think I had him at zero, but I remember you and I had a debate about mm-hmm. how much he was going to run, and you were dead wrong, so I just want to point that out.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, I agree. The dip in walk rate is a little disappointing. His strikeout rate went up a little bit as well. So I don't think he really took a step forward last year, which was a little surprising since it was his age 24 season. How is it that he's never had 100 RBIs? He's had back-to-back 30-homer seasons. He's such a great hitter. How's he never driven in 100? Do we think this is just fluky and that this is the year he finally gets like 110 or something like that?
I think it's possible, but I mean, he typically bats in front of kind of the big power hitters, so I think it's more likely that he continues to score over 100 runs, and maybe that increases rather than maybe he gets to 100 RBIs.
Yeah, I just think people are... How big of a deal is that with the shortstop eligibility? Because like we've been talking about, the steals probably won't return. He's never had 100 RBIs. He the walk rate dipped, the strikeout rate went up a little bit. So how much of the fact is that he has shortstop eligibility makes up for all those deficiencies?
What do you think?
I don't really look at them as deficiencies exactly. But, I mean, if he drives in 95 runs, that's not that different from driving in 100 runs. It's just the benchmark part of it. But the being a shortstop versus being a third baseman, by the time you compare it to the bottom of the pool, even in a 12-team or 15-team league, it's not a big boost. I think it's a plus for sure, but it's not it's not adding $5 to his value in terms of an auction situation. So I'd say yes, it's nice, but it's not. Third base has a lot of good players, but it's not that much deeper than shortstop at that point.
Yeah, I agree. The reason I ask is I feel like people overrate the eligibility.
I don't think it's the shortstop eligibility per se that's nice. I think because the top part of the shortstop pool is stacked as well this year with guys like Lindor and Seager and Correa and so forth. What I do think it does is it gives you flexibility in deeper formats in season when guys get injured.
And exactly.
And especially in daily leagues. You know, daily leagues, head-to-head formats where, you know, you need to kind of compile stats week to week. I think it gives you just that extra bit of flexibility, which is really nice, especially when, you know, your guy that you drafted at shortstop, like let's say you've got a Marcus Semien and he gets injured. All of a sudden, you can slide Machado in at shortstop and feel comfortable. Or if you lose, you know, your Anthony Rendon because he's injury prone, you know, being able to move Machado back over to third really just helps, you know, even out your team. So I think it's not so much that he's so much better as a shortstop, because I think you guys are right that this is one of the first years in a long time we're not looking at the middle infield as a detriment in terms of positional scarcity. I think what it does do is just give your team overall flexibility, which, in like I said, in the deeper formats, AL only, NL only, 15 team or deeper mixed, it can be very helpful when you get hit by a rash of injuries.
I agree.
Let's go ahead and move on to Adrian Beltre. And the old men get no love in fantasy. I mean, fantasy in itself is a game which is somewhat ageist. But Adrian Beltre is coming off a season in which he hit 32 home runs with a 300 average. Peter, do you love Adrian Beltre, or is he a guy you're sticking away from?
I have a healthy projection for him. I can't come up with a good reason other than his age to think that he's really going to decline this year. So I think the ceiling part of it, what he did last year, is still in play. He's probably not likely to repeat that. The power was down the two previous years. But he's a special athlete. He's a great hitter in every context and has been for his entire long career, except for the year with the surgery in the preseason. But I digress, and that was a long time ago. The thing about him, though, is that he's 38 this year, and that has to increase the injury risk. So there is definitely more of a potential that he's going to miss time. He's already missed 2 weeks in spring training with a calf injury, although supposedly he's now healthy and is going to play in the WBC. So, you know, we'll see. I have a good projection for him, but I've knocked his price down a little bit because I'm a little bit below that, because I do think you're taking risk with a 38-year-old guy.
Eli, are you interested in a 38-year-old Adrian Beltre?
I am. Remember when people thought that he was only good in contract years? Yeah, they were pretty stupid. I mean, this guy, I don't care how old he is. He's a lock to hit for a high average. He just never strikes out. He hits in a good park. And, you know, people used to ding him for being injury prone, I think, back in the day, but it's been a long time since he's been hurt. I think even in a down year, you can lock in 80 runs, 20 homers, and 80 RBIs, and there's a decent chance he does better than that in all three categories. The only thing I worry about it, I do think the homers take a little bit of a dip. Like Peter said, they were down the previous 2 years, and his homer to fly ball rate was a little elevated last year. So, you know, but who's going to complain about 25 homers from a 38-year-old? So I'm fine with that.
But, you know, that's also a characteristic of a guy who's aging, the hitting more fly balls, you know, going for the homer more, because you have to get started earlier, and that leads you to more of a power swing. I'm not sure that's what happened to him last year, but everybody hit more home runs last year. But that is a characteristic of getting older, and it's not a bad one. It keeps guys playing into their late 30s sometimes.
Yeah, and I mean, I think what Beltre has that a lot of other guys don't have is a really safe floor. So, I mean, you know, will he hit 32 home runs again? I don't know for sure. But I can pretty much bank, you know, 20 to 25 home runs with a 300 average, a pretty decent OBP, and feel pretty comfortable that the supporting cast around him is going to be good enough to help him with the runs and RBIs. So if you've taken some risk earlier in your draft or earlier in your auction, and you're looking for a guy who's going to deliver a pretty steady and safe baseline of numbers, I think Beltre is a really good option. He's a guy that's going to end up on a number of my teams this year. I believe he's already ended up on two. So Beltre is a guy that I fully endorse, and I think gets just underrated because of his age. And while that is understandable, it's been a long time since he missed or since he played in less than 140 games. I mean, the last time he didn't play in 140 was 2011. So he's a pretty healthy, stable commodity for you in fantasy.
He is indeed.
Speaking of guys who might not be healthy and stable all the time, but have some upside, Anthony Rendon is going as the number 9 third baseman off the board in NFBC leagues, around pick 92. Peter, what are your thoughts on Rendon for this year?
Well, he went from being kind of a darling of a player to being kind of, he just feels kind of boring to me. I think probably unfair. He's a fine player and still, you know, just moving into his prime in terms of his career. I like him. He's solid. I don't expect that there's a big burst of more out there for him. But when he stays healthy, which has been a problem, he's a solid player.
Eli, are you interested in Anthony Rendon?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. This guy confounds me. 2 years ago, a few years ago, he has a monster year. Then he follows it up with a garbage year. Last year, he was solid. I mean, I think Peter was right. Like, he kind of gets dinged for being boring. I don't think that's fair. He's pretty solid. I mean, I could see him hitting, like, 280 with 20 homers and 90 RBIs, 90 runs, a handful of steals. So, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, especially for, like, the ninth, third baseman off the board. That's pretty solid. But, and I know there is some upside there because he's only, what, 26? And, you know, the year he had 3 years ago was pretty special. But I just feel like some of that gets outweighed by the fact that, man, he's a real big injury risk. So, I love that he hits a ton of fly balls. It's good for his homer output, but not great for his average. He had a really good second half last year, but he only stole 3 bags. So I never know what to think about this guy. If he slips a little later in drafts because people are scared for injuries, I'll grab him. But otherwise, I'll probably avoid.
I think Rendon is a guy that is the perfect example of a player that is format dependent. Because in a deep format, in AL only, NL only, deep mixed leagues, you cannot go after a guy like Rendon, at least in my opinion, because the injury risk is too great, and the replacement value available on the waiver wire is too shallow to take that risk for me. In a 12-team league, in a 10-team league, I'm more than happy to scoop up a guy like Anthony Rendon, because I think he has a decent ceiling, and there's replacement value in case he goes down. I'm just too afraid to draft a guy or buy a guy in an auction like Rendon when there's nothing going to be available the rest of the year, and you're going to have to kind of hodgepodge together your lineup week in and week out. I love the talent, and I was one of those guys going into 2015 that was really really pushing him up draft boards, and said I think this guy is a borderline first round pick. And I got burnt pretty hard, and I forgot about, or at least I didn't acknowledge the injury issues he had in college, because people forget that this was supposed to be the number one overall draft pick in 2011 when he came out of college, but fell to number 6 because he just couldn't stay healthy. So, I mean, his injury issues date all the way back to his college years. I'm not willing to risk it in deep formats, but in the shallow mixed leagues, I'm more than happy to take a gamble on him. Let's talk about Javier Baez, because this is a guy that had an amazing postseason. And when guys have amazing postseasons in front of the world, because the world is watching, it can tend to inflate guys' prices. And he's currently going around pick 118 in NFBC. Peter, is that too high for you or about right?
Well, he's an interesting case. He doesn't have a position this year. He doesn't have a starting job. He's going to play. He's going to fill in, most every day somewhere, either starting or come in later in the game. So he could get 450 at-bats. Somebody could get hurt and he could see more. For me, the reason not to take him so high isn't so much the playing time, which will solve itself in some ways, but I the contact issues are concerning. He doesn't walk. He strikes out 25% of the time last year. You can get away with that, but he's young and he hasn't proven that he's going to be able to get away with it once the pitchers adjust, and he doesn't have a job. So I think there are good reasons to be wary about him. He's obviously delightful to watch, and I loved watching him play every day in the postseason. But it's going to be a different story this year.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Javier Baez for this year?
Yeah, I pretty much agree with Peter. I feel like people fall in love. Like he said, he's so fun to watch. He's really young. He's really dynamic. He's got that power speed combo that we all love. He's got the position flexibility. So there are a ton of reasons to like him. But that 3% walk rate, 24% strikeout rate just terrifies me. And, he had a near full season of at-bats last year, and he didn't have 15 homers. He didn't have 15 steals. And he didn't crack 60 RBIs or 60 runs. So, I just feel like there are guys that are going later that are more reliable. Like, who would you rather have, Baez or Zobrist?
Ooh. I think I would go Zobrist, but that's really close for me.
That's interesting. I think there's a good reason to take Baez, because he could grow into it. He could grow into better contact, a little more power. He could easily walk into a full-time job or close to it, and the at-bats could come. Those are all things that are possible, but those are things to let him drop down a little bit. Zobrist is he's the devil, you know, and if you're going to go spend a honest dollar, that's the place to spend it, I think.
What about Elvis Andrus?
No, I'm too...
Yeah, both these guys are going after Baez right now.
I think I would go Baez, but I do think Andrus is a tad bit underrated this year.
I've always been a fan of Andrus, and you know, when he steals bases, his is a much different profile. But when he steals bases, he's going to be the more valuable player until Baez matures and you know gets 500 at bats again, and that could be this year. But I'm saying that's two moving parts that need to come into a line for him to be ranked higher, I think.
Yeah, I mean, my biggest issue with Baez is. I'm worried about where the playing time comes from because they have Zobrist. They seem to want to play Schwarber in the outfield. I don't think they're moving Brian off of third. I think he needs an injury to get 500 plate appearances. Now, could he easily, you know, Swiss Army knife his way into 450? Sure, but I mean, if I'm taking a guy in the top 120, I want him to be a full-time player for the most part. You know, 15 to 17 home runs at a mediocre average doesn't really do my team a lot of good, you know, and I think people are kind of betting on the come, and I think people are also a little bit enthralled with what they saw in the World Series and during the playoffs and his fancy glove work and him being such a kind of charismatic young player, and that's all well and good, but at the end of the day, I think people are paying for production we haven't seen yet and aren't guaranteed to see. And for me, in that reason, I'm out.
I agree with all of that. But I do think that you say it takes an injury for him to get, you know, more of a full role. But that I think that's going to happen because it could be an injury like literally anywhere on the diamond. And Baez pretty much moves into the starting lineup somehow because they have a bunch of guys that are flexible and can play different positions. So I think if anyone goes down, Baez is the sole beneficiary.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I made a note that although he's blocked by a lot of different players, if any one of them gets hurt or you know doesn't perform, I'm looking at you, John Jay and Albert Almora. You know that he's going to end up with more at bats than he's projected to right now.
All right, let's talk about Justin Turner, though. Some people have said I look like Justin Turner. I am definitely not a Dodger fan at being a native San Franciscan at the moment. So, Peter, what are your thoughts on Justin Turner?
He's fascinating. You know, we saw him with the Mets, and he just didn't look like a very good ball player. And he in Los Angeles, he's become, you know, he looks like a really good ball player. And he's coming off you know, an unbelievable batting average year that didn't look like it was sustainable because of whatever the BABIP furies were supporting him. But the last 2 years, he's hit for power. He's been just very solid. For me, that makes him a late bloomer. You know, I don't really have a theory about why he had to be 30 before he started playing regularly and started actually producing at the major league level. But he did, and guys who are like that. You know, often it happens all the time. And very few of those guys don't also flame out very quickly. They have a few good years and then their careers don't linger into the mid late 30s. They crash for whatever reason. It's like the chickens come home to roost. So there've been exceptions. I'm not saying that it's guaranteed that's going to happen, but I worry about that with him. At the same time, he has been a very solid ball player the last 2 years. So I like him, but I wouldn't be excited about him or expect. I wouldn't push him, put it that way.
Eli, are you expecting more from Justin Turner, or do you think there may be a letdown coming?
I don't think it'll be really a letdown. I get the sense that people don't really believe in what he did last year, and I get it. Like, he had never really done that before, and he's 32, so it seemed a little bit fluky for a player of that age to finally start being a really good player. But like Peter said, he's kind of been doing this for a few years now. He just never had the full role that he has now. So I believe in what he's doing. I don't think there's a lot more upside. And, you know, maybe he won't be quite as good as he was last year. But I think this is the kind of player he is. He's really good. So this wasn't surprising to me what he did last year.
I think the power was a little bit surprising to me. And honestly, the amount of games played was a little bit surprising to me. And I think both of those numbers will probably take somewhat of a hit. I mean, it's the first time playing more than 130 games in a season. He almost increased his home runs by 10, 9 more home runs than in 2015. And that was a huge jump up from 2014. So I think maybe the power takes a dip in that he's not necessarily a mid to high 20 home run guy. He's more of a high teens, low 20s guy. And I think there is some value to that. But to me, it just there are guys going around him that I think I like more and I feel have more upside. Jake Lamb is going about 21 picks behind him. Ryan Healy is going about 50 picks behind him. Mike Moustakas is going, 75 picks behind him. I just think there are guys going later that offer the same kind of floor but a much higher ceiling. And I think there should be some questions about what the Dodgers lineup is going to look like. You know, you've got some aging players and some really unproven players kind of riddled up and down that lineup. Maybe things come together for them. I know Pecota really likes the Dodgers this year, but I see some real question marks up and down that Dodger lineup. So, and maybe that's just my Giants homerism, but I'm not a big fan of Justin Turner, and that isn't going to change unless I see a repeat of last year.
I'm not a big fan of anyone who looks like Justin Turner.
Thanks, Eli.
No problem.
Let's go ahead and move on, and we'll talk about Nick Castellanos, who was off to a fast start last year before losing time to injury. Peter, are you willing to buy in on kind of a rebound?
Well, he's a really interesting guy. I was all over him last year as a guy who was going to hit for more power, and then he hit for more power. So I thought he made me look good. But then he got hurt, and he ended up with kind of the same numbers, fewer at-bats, much better ISO, slugging percentage. But, you know, the numbers and the overall earnings look kind of similar, which – maybe takes people off of him, or maybe it makes them exaggerate how much he actually accomplished last year. Because apart from the power, almost everything else was exactly the same as the year before. He didn't really turn into a better hitter. He just turned into a more powerful hitter. There's nothing wrong with that. That's fine. But it's that still means he's going to be more of a 260 hitter than a 280 hitter. And that's not so fine for somebody that you're starting to bid up into the higher regions of the board. So I like him. He's young still. He could conceivably grow as a that type of hitter. Just surprised me that despite the advances he made last year, he didn't really change anything overall. It was just a little, he hit for more power.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Castellanos?
I think he improved a little bit last year. He's about to turn 25, so this could be a little bit of a breakout. Kind of like Peter said, he used to be like – he's like the classic doubles hitter who everyone's like, oh, those doubles would start turning into homers, and that seemed to happen a little bit last year. I think he's going to be more of like a 280 guy. He's always been a high BABIP guy, so I kind of buy the 285 average last year, which was a nice improvement. Apparently, he's going to be moving to second in the batting order, which is really good for him because he needs to start scoring some runs because – He needs something to increase his value because he's never going to steal bases and he's never going to be a big time power RBI guy. So that'll be helpful for his overall value. I think I like where he's going in drafts. I think he's a pretty solid pick.
Yeah,
that's a good point about batting second.
I'm surprised. I hadn't heard that he might be batting second. Because does that mean they're going to move Justin Upton probably down to fifth or sixth? Because that's an interesting move to me. You know, with Miggy still in that lineup, obviously batting probably third. Victor Martinez probably batting sixth.
Yeah, I don't really like
Martinez.
I don't think it's a great call. Castellanos, what, 6% walk rate, 25% strikeout rate? Not exactly a prototypical two hitter, but maybe it'll work out.
Not that Brad Ausmus really cares about statistics. But that seems like a weird fit to me. I mean, currently Roster Resource has JD Martinez batting second, Castellanos batting sixth. And I think that is probably a better fit. God, I forget how right-handed the Tigers lineup is until I look at it. But I like Castellanos as kind of a cheaper option in mixed leagues. I mean, he's currently going as the number 23rd baseman off the board, 206 overall in NFBC. And I think that's kind of a steal because the power gains last year are hidden by the fact that he only was able to play in 110 games due to injury. He so far looks healthy in spring training. I could see this guy hitting 25 home runs. And if he can move up in the order, like Eli is saying, you know, if he can score 75 runs and, you know, 75 RBIs, I think you've got a sneaky, decent player. I don't think the 285 average will sustain. He does have a kind of career high or higher career BABIP than one would think, given his skill set. But, I mean, it typically settles in around the 230 mark, not the 245 mark. So I think he's probably closer to being a 265 guy, which is his career norm. So, you know, maybe it goes up a little bit to 270, 275, but nothing. I don't think the 285 is necessarily sustainable.
Brad Auspice said that he's displaying faster and better base running in camp, which makes him the favorite to be the second in the order. So maybe he'll go from one CL to two this year.
Yeah. I mean, he's a real speed demon. Let's take a quick break. We'll be back right after this.
It's that time again. That's right. It's fantasy baseball season, and the Fantasy Black Book is back and better than ever. This is Joe Pisapia, author of the 9-time best-selling Fantasy Black Book series, number one right now on Amazon, on iTunes, and for the first time ever, the Fantasy Baseball Black Book can be held in your hand. Yes, what a beautiful world we live in. Head over to Amazon and buy your hard copy as well today. Baseball is coming. Are you ready?
All right, let's go ahead and jump back in and talk about Yoan Moncada. And Moncada was traded from the Boston Red Sox to Eli's Chicago White Sox. So for this one, Eli, I'll let you give your take. What are your thoughts on Yoan Moncada for this season?
Oh, man, the one time you went to me first, it was the one time I wanted to be last. I don't know what to think about Moncada. The only thing I really think is that I feel like he's going to be called up much earlier than a lot of people suspect. I have been hearing people thinking like, oh, August, September, like, no way. The White Sox always rush their prospects. I know they typically do that with pitching prospects, but that's also because they never have any actual good hitting prospects. The only time they've had a good hitting prospect in the last 10 years was Tim Anderson, and he got called up a couple months earlier than most people suspected. And apparently the White Sox just cut Brett Laurie about an hour ago before we started recording, so that might improve Moncada's timetable a little bit as well. The competition at second base is really bad now. They have the artist formerly known as Carlos Sanchez, who's now Yolmer Sanchez, as the slated starter at second base, and that's just – it's not pretty. So I think that the White Sox are going to want to give their – the White Sox are obsessed with attendance because they never have it, and they're always looking at the Cubs, and they're always jealous. So I got a feeling they're going to call up Moncada a little bit earlier than people think. I think he's in the AAA at most 2 months. They call him up, and, you know, then he has a pretty decent fantasy season. That's really all I can say.
Peter, what are your thoughts on Moncada?
Well, I saw the note about Laurie too, and I think that is the prelude to him coming up earlier rather than spending half a season down or whatever. You know, that we started looking at June 1st and that stuff. He was spectacularly – he struck out a spectacular amount of the time last year, and – his minor league numbers are, the strikeouts are there, but he has he apparently has a terrific eye and he's got power and he's got a lot of speed. He could come up and hit 225 and still be a valuable fantasy player for fantasy teams. So, depending on league rules, I think he's an awfully good guy to speculate on. Both because he might come up earlier than some people think, and because the power and the speed are there, but I wouldn't count on batting average from him. And obviously, he's a good risky play if your league mates don't bid him up too high, don't push him too early in whatever your rules are.
Peter, one thing I want to ask you is how many team league would it have to be for you to be willing to stash him on your roster and just wait till he gets called up?
Well, that's a rules thing. And if you're in a Towel Wars league, you can take somebody and then put him on your reserve and keep him on your reserve until he comes up. So I in almost any league like that, I would take him over the bums that usually go in the end game. Will be available in the first week of waivers. I mean, that just makes sense to me to take care of it if you can then, rather than take some boring, uninteresting guy who has no potential, but you'll need to play when you're not playing Mancada because he's in the minor leagues. If you have to keep him on your active roster, that gets much dicier, much faster. I think you have to, that's very league specific, not even format specific.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think this news about Brett Laurie being cut is going to skyrocket Moncada's prices. And as much as I know that kind of clears up a spot for him to play, it's not like Brett Laurie was going to keep Moncada down when the White Sox wanted to bring up. So I don't really necessarily think Laurie was a major obstacle to begin with. So for me, I just can't buy that a team like the White Sox, who are not going to be close to competing anytime soon, wants to start the clock on Yoan Moncada.
Yeah, but they're not paying. Like, the Red Sox are literally paying the entire contract. Like, Moncada, they don't have to pay shit on Moncada. I don't think they care about that. I don't think they don't. Their payroll got slashed. I think they slashed their payroll the second most of any team in baseball. They care about attendance. They don't care about the clock. I really don't think they do. Of all the teams in baseball, I feel like they care about the clock about because this is also a team that always locks up their young guys, like they did with Quintana and Sale. They did it with Danks back in the day. They're probably gonna do it with Rodon soon. So I don't know if that is accurate with the White Sox.
All right. I mean, you know them better than I do. I think Peter's right about where he's gonna hit in terms of batting average. I wouldn't expect with his contact issues for him to really break 235, 240 this year. So you're going to have to build in kind of that kind of deficiency in batting average. But I think he's a guy that could hit for double-digit power and steal probably 10 to 20 bases throughout the season. I think the runs and RBIs could be lacking a little bit, especially if the White Sox decide to move other pieces like Abreu and Frazier. Because it may be at some point, it may just be prospects and kind of, stopgap type players the rest of the way after the trade deadline for the White Sox. So it's not going to be a very powerful lineup. The runs and RBIs probably won't be there. I just think there's too much risk than there is reward on a guy like Moncada for this year. Long term, love the kid. Think he's going to be a star. I think he will figure out a way to make enough contact to really show off the power and not have the average be a detriment. But for this season only, I mean, I was in the AL only CBS auction last week, and Moncada before this news went for, I think, $12. And that to me, it's too much. I'm not willing to pay for it, especially because I don't know when the guy is officially going to be up and really what he's going to be able to deliver at a young age.
Can I just say that my world became a better place today now that I won't have to watch Brett Laurie flail at sliders low and away anymore? My God. I like Laurie, and I'm actually a little bit bummed they cut him because I still feel like he's got a little bit of upside. It's not like they were paying him that much anyway. But that was really frustrating to watch. I'll tell you that.
Let's move on to a different guy who likes to flail every once in a while. That's Danny Valencia, now playing in Seattle. Peter, what are your thoughts on Valencia for this season?
Well, he's the Seattle situation is so up in the air. It's hard to know what to make of it. Valencia can play. He's a better hitter against lefties, but he hits okay against righties. I think he had 10 home runs last year against righties. But he's supposed to be in a platoon against hitting against lefties, which means he's not going to play enough to have value in pretty much any league. On the other hand, his platoon partner is Vogelbach, who's not, like, we don't know, is he actually a major leaguer or not? He could easily be a bust, in which case Valencia can play. So it could become a full-time guy. So I kind of like him as if he's the last guy taken in your league and you can stash him, I think he's worth the risk because he could be a sort of useful third baseman if he plays full time, but he might not play full time, which makes him kind of worthless.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Danny Valencia?
Yeah, I was looking at, I remember playing him a lot in DFS last year against lefties because he slugged 535. He was a real asset. But I'm looking at his 2015 splits, and it was almost the reverse. He slugged 556 against righties in 214 at-bats and only 458 against lefties in 131 at-bats. So I think maybe he's not just the lefty master maybe that we thought. I mean, I think he is a solid player. I think he's always been underrated. He's a versatile guy, can play multiple positions. So, yeah, the fact that he's in a platoon could hurt him. But I do think he'll find a way to get more at-bats. There are just certain guys in baseball that always just find ways to get at-bats. I feel like Valencia is kind of one of those guys. So,
Go ahead. I don't see how he takes at-bats away from Kyle Seager, though. And
yeah, that's true.
He can't play the outfield, and Nelson Cruz is the DH. So they're never going to sit Cruz to play Valencia.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think Valencia's the trade for him was kind of insurance at a couple different spots. You know, if Dyson struggles against lefties, they could, you know, throw him out in left field and make do with him out there. You know, if Vogelbach struggles against lefties, they can make do with him out there. If Mitch Haniger isn't what they thought he was, you know, they can try to move him out there. So I think he is, going to play kind of a Swiss Army knife role. But he doesn't really cost anything on draft day. I mean, currently, Valencia is the 28th third baseman off the board, 328th overall, going in the Martin Prado neighborhood. I've been a long kind of detractor of Valencia because I don't think he's a very complete player. But he has shown the ability. He showed the ability last year to hit against righties, much better. Hit 275 and 10 home runs. Against right-handed pitching in 142 at-bats. So, I mean, it's not necessarily even a small sample. I think in, like, a deeper format, I wouldn't mind taking Sean because he's going to have third base and outfield eligibility to start the season. Depending on your league format, he'll start the season with first base because he played 17 games there. So if you play in a Yahoo league or in a league that only requires 15 games, at the position, he's going to have first base eligibility also, and he will pick it up pretty quickly, probably in season as well. I think Valencia is kind of a nice little cheap bargain. You know, he's one of those guys you're not going to have to pay more than a few bucks for on draft day, and he should out-earn that no matter what. All right, let's finish up with Pablo Sandoval, who is in the best shape of his life for about the sixth time during his career. So, Peter, are you buying in on a Pablo Sandoval resurgence?
Well, yeah, but resurgence to where exactly? I better than last year, obviously. But he's 5 for 12 so far in spring training. He's made 5 throws, hasn't made an error. I haven't seen him. So the biggest issue for him is if his shoulder is healthy, he's going to get a solid chance to play. He's a decent enough, not a big power guy, a contact hitter who has played in some awfully big games and had some big successes and some embarrassing failures. So he's not an exciting guy to buy. The injury risk is there, but if the shoulder is healthy, he's a 15 home run, 280 guy who, you know, is going to be worthwhile playing. You just don't want to get too excited about it, I don't think.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Pablo Sandoval?
Yeah, I'm not even willing to go as far as Peter did on this one. I like Peter said, like, you know, yeah, he could have a resurgence, but to where? Like, he was always overrated to begin with. He's never had 80 runs scored in a season. The last time he even had 70 was in 2009. He's only twice hit 20 homers, and the last time was 2011. He's only once had 80 RBIs. That was 2009. He doesn't run. He said Peter said that he could hit 280. Well, he hasn't even done that since 2012. Obviously, the injuries. And also, I just think the Red Sox, no matter what his contract is, they don't play this shit. Like, they're not they don't mess around. Like, they're like the Patriots. Like, they're going to do whatever they can to compete. Money's not an issue. Like, they'll go trade for someone else. Like, I just don't think they care what they're paying Sandoval. Like, they'll give him a chance, but if they're not going to give him much of a chance. They'll go find someone. They'll go trade for someone. They'll bring up a kid. Like, they'll do whatever. I just don't think Sandoval's going to have much of a chance this year, whether he's healthy or not.
Yeah, I think the point you guys bring up in terms of, like, what is his real upside, even if he is healthy, is really the right point to be made. I mean, he never really capitalized on that big postseason where he kind of lit the world on fire. This is another example of a guy who, you know, performed so well, is so likable during the postseason that people started paying up for that in season. I mean, he hasn't hit more than 20 home runs since 2011. I mean, you know, he's never scored, or he hasn't scored more than 70 or more than 80 runs since 2009. Or,
Justin,
sorry, RBIs.
Do you listen to what I say? I literally said like all those things verbatim.
I'm reaffirming it. You know, I'm a Giants fan.
Feel very offended right now. Very offended.
We've done enough podcasts to know that you should know by now that I don't listen to you.
Apparently, everyone just spaces out when I talk. I get it. My voice isn't very good, so it's fine.
So, I mean, for me, it's a matter of, I just think that late in a draft, because, I mean, he's currently going as a 30th third baseman off the board, 365th overall. I want some high upside, you know. Would I rather have Pablo Sandoval or, you know, 50 picks later get Joey Gallo?
Because I'd rather draft Brett Lurie, and he doesn't have a job.
I mean, to me, I'd rather take a Gallo going later. I'd rather take a Trevor Plouffe going later. You know, I mean, there's a number of guys, a Jacoby Jones going much later. I think the point that you made, Eli, that the Red Sox aren't going to play, you know, or just keep running him out there if he's bad, is a really good point, especially because they've got a guy who's a third baseman waiting in the wings that should be ready by midseason in Rafael Devers, that is going to be a stud power hitter. If Sandoval can't put it together, Devers will be up in July, and Sandoval kind of revert back to being a bench player. All right, that is going to wrap us up for this episode. Peter, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Definitely. Why don't you tell people, again, where you can reach on social media and then plug your stuff so that way people know where they can read your stuff.
Yeah, I'm at on Twitter at Kroyte, Kroyte. And you can find me on Patton and Co, PattonandCo.com, which you should come by and check it out. You have to register, but it's free. And lots of great baseball conversation about the news, about old players, about fantasy baseball. Great stuff there. And we're very busy in March.
Yeah, we all are right now. This is kind of the busy season, the home stretch before the start of the season. Eli, what are you working on? Where can people reach you?
You can find me on Twitter at EliFWFB. And like you, I'm working on doing the Survivor podcast. You got to check that out if you're a reality TV fan.
Yes, we are. We are going to go record an episode, episode 2 of the Survivor podcast, right after this. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. Read all my baseball stuff either on friendsoffantasybenefits.com or on Fangraphs' fantasy side, which is called Rotographs. I just put up an article earlier this week on Rotographs. It was on the Barf League draft, the San Francisco Bay Area Roto League, with guys like Howard Bender and Ray Flowers, and Doug Thorber and Sammy Reed all were there, Laura Michaels as well. It was a blast, and it was a fun league to kind of review in print, so definitely go check that out over on Rotographs. That will wrap us up for Eli, Peter, and myself. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.